The House Committee of Revenue for June 29, 2015 will come to order. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 80. Mazin? And I'll note for those who are here that the House is reconvening at 1:30. So we hope that the hearing can be done with dispatch, although I do recognize this is a very long bill. Mazin, you want to give us the overview?
Yes.
And do we have any witnesses signed up for this bill?
We don't seem to have any witnesses, but... it's a small bill, Mr. Chair, so I'll go over it section by section. The bill is a natural outcome of your Senate Bill 270 of the 2013 session. And what that bill did is allowed the University of Oregon, Portland State University at that time, to establish their own boards, an independent governing board, and also put a process in statute for other public universities to do the same if they choose to. And I think since then, the rest of the universities in the system kind of moved that way and, in essence, made the State Board of Higher Education as well as the Oregon University system kind of empty shell that is not anymore functioning in a sense that it needs to do. So what this bill does is takes away the process to its fruition or its completion. It allows for these universities to inherit some of the responsibilities that were done on their behalf by the State Board of Higher Education, and as well goes and abolishes these different places, these different offices and agencies in the statutes. So it does that, and as well moves the responsibilities and the financial management of many of the funds and accounts in statutes to the different places that they belong to. Either they move them to the university itself when that is done, or at when there is a need for the general state work and supervision of this process, the HEC, the Higher Education Coordination Council, is inserted in that process. Moreover, when in a couple of places, DAS would be working in that capacity for the appropriate bond transactions and so on. So then it abolishes, of course, all the Chancellor's Office and the Board of Higher Education, and aligns those projects to the university. Then you would have the second section of the bill. Those are, or the second part segment of the bill, Section 44 to 221, is mostly confirming amendments to bring all these different processes that have been put in place into legal language, and that to put the legal language into the move from what it used to be before Senate Bill 270-213 and what it is today, or what's going to happen at the beginning of the session. Now, this has been a process that has been working in collaboration of the different universities and the HEC, and it was all worked and coordinated as well as actually crafted with the contribution of Legislative Council. I asked Dan Gilbert from Legislative Council to come and answer any of the questions or go through any of the detail that you would like to know with the legal process if that is done. In other words, don't ask me, ask him.
He's out there. He wrote the bill.
Is he here?
Yes, he is.
Excuse me.
Please. Sorry, the pollen is particularly bad today, so I'm liable to do that several more times while we're meeting. Colleagues, it's a fairly long bill. I think we've got a good summary of it. I will note that, that there are conflict amendments that we will have for tomorrow morning. I'm asking to find out when we can meet tomorrow morning in hopes that we can move this thing along. Is there anyone here representing the HEC, DAS, or any of the universities? No. We'll want some of them tomorrow morning to explain that they think this bill is okay, if they think that. So, any questions? Yes, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dan, maybe you could just touch on, I think, what Mazin was referring to, that if Senate Bill, I think, 215 goes through, that will do some reorganization with the OEIB, and that might have an impact on part of the fiscal that could be attached to this bill.
Chair Barnhart, Rep. Johnson.
For the record.
For the record, Dan Gilbert from Legislative Council. In response to your question, I cannot speak to the fiscal element of it itself. I will say that the intent of this bill is to the degree possible to retain the status quo. And one of during our conversations with Treasury, with DAS, with everyone, it was very clear that the real policy bills would take precedence over this bill to the degree they conflict.
Okay.
Is that the conflict amendment we're talking about, or something else?
Chair Barnhart, I'm not sure exactly where Senate Bill 215 is in the process, but if there would be a conflict relating to Senate Bill 80, and I'm just not sure if it would be part of this particular conflict amendment or the conflict amendment for Senate Bill 215, whichever.
Thank you. Any other questions? I really would like to hear from those organizations, and since we're going to have another time, a chance at it tomorrow, I would love to have it on the record that HEC, DAS, the Treasurer, and at least one of the universities is happy with the bill, and they think it does what it's supposed to do, which is make all these technical fixes. So we'll hope that we hear from them tomorrow. We don't have much time left in session, but I think it's important for the committee and the House not to act on this bill until we've got those kind of representations in front of us. Anything else for LC? Thank you very much. And with that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 80. And we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 567. Who's on that one? Paul. Okay. And I think we're looking at an amendment on this, aren't we, Representative Reed?
We are.
We are. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the relevant amendment is the A8 amendment, which is actually identical to the -3 from 2961. So it makes several changes to the make changes with respect to the Senate 567 that came over to you. As just a reminder, what this bill does is it provides an estimate of what's called excess capital gains, income tax collections from capital gains. This bill clarifies that this is not based on collections, but rather based on annual tax liability, and you see that in line 5 of the first page there in section 1. There is a calculation that's done by the state economist where he would look at capital gains revenue for the two prior years and take that average and then compare it with the average for the 3 years prior to that. So if you're looking at a calculation, for example, for this session, which would be done in the year 2015, he would look at the average of 13-14 and compare that with the average for 11-12, for 10-11 and 12. So it's 2 years compared to 3 years since they're averages, then you would multiply it by 2 to get the total excess capital gains. A couple of things that this does also with respect to, just to make it very clear, even though we felt was clear, and so did council, but there was some concern about when the first transfer would be done under this calculation. The way the wording was in the years and so forth, it wouldn't be prior to 2019, so right at the end of the 17-19 biennium. And that calculation would be, this made it clear from section 2, sub 2 there, may not occur prior to June 1 of 2019. So there would be an estimate that went into the 17-19 biennium, the estimate we'd done by the state economist, but no transfer would take place until June of 19. I do have an updated table for you on the impact. You remember my table full of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, can do the big table. Copy there. Remember all the numbers? Well, there they are again. And all of them are the same, with the exception of the last few years, which we updated for the May forecast. The first calculation would be done in June of 2019. So the first calculation, there would be a negative 53.7, so there'd be no deposit made. The second calculation would be in 21, it would be a minus 191. So that's the reason for those negative numbers is we're looking at what we think is a peak in capital gains revenue that's occurring now. Capital gains revenue, for example, last calendar year, as you recall, the state economist told you a couple of weeks ago that it was 80% increase. So we're right at a peak. We're cresting on a capital gains rate. Our history would tell us we are, and we never know for sure, of course. So that's why you see those negatives. It comes down to an average. And you still look at those numbers out there, even in 2020, for example, $683 million. Well, that compares with $237 million in 2010. So it's still almost triple the number it was in 2010. So it's a very volatile component. And, of course, again, the concept here is to capture this volatile revenue source, put it in the Education Stability Fund in those periods where we can mechanically calculate it's above what its trend is. So the revenue impact on this would show no revenue impact for the first three biennia. The first time we would anticipate a transfer based on the May revenue forecast would be in the 21-23 biennium. So that would occur in June of 23. And it would be about a $42 million transfer. And, of course, you know the caveats that the projections on capital gains, the line is a lot smoother than history. So we would anticipate a lot of volatility around that trend.
In other words, we believe you at our peril. Huh?
Well, it's an objective estimate, but not necessarily accurate.
Thank you. That's a great comfort. We appreciate it. Yeah.
It's an argument for the bill, Mr. Chair.
Questions for Paul? Representative Reed, I think this is your bill in effect.
Mr.
Chair, do you want to speak to it?
I think Paul did a very good summary of the bill. I think the only a couple of things to add, which really all stem from the recognition that's at the heart of his discussion, which is that this is the most volatile source of our, or the volatile component of our revenue stream. And for me, that's almost the full story. So I think we should put it in the reserve fund. Paul has also talked about, on several occasions, the Pew study that talked about how important it is for states to find that most volatile portion of their revenue stream and find a way to carve off some of it and put it in reserve. This is the piece that I think makes the most sense for us, and I hope we're going to be able to move it forward. And I was going to say I'm happy to make a motion, but it looks like there's some other people who want to say something first.
Well, and right now we're in public hearing, and
Sorry.
We do have one witness.
I thought you said
I'll recognize Representative Davis first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Paul, for all your work on this. And Representative Reed, I do want to just read into the record a Legislative Council opinion on 567A with respect to the kicker. Now, although this amendment would change it, I believe the technical component of how the revenue is treated as unreceded revenue, then transferred to the Education and Stability Fund, is exactly the same between this amendment and 567A. This Legislative Council opinion is in the record as a floor letter submitted by Senator Farioli, and the short answer is that Legislative Council believes, and it is certainly my intent, that Senate Bill 567A does not affect the method for calculating the kicker, that legislative council believes the monies diverted from unreceded revenues into the Education Stability Fund would still count as general fund revenue for purposes of calculating the kicker under Article 9, Section 14. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Sheketov. Oh, there he is, hiding in the back. Anyone else want to be heard on this bill today?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, Chuck Sheketoff of the Oregon Center for Public Policy. You know, the issue of volatility isn't a problem in and of itself if you're able to save for the rainy days when it goes down. And what the reason I put neutral on this is I really don't understand the bill. The nature of our problem is that we get tied to our projections. It goes to the issue of the kicker, for sure. That we get tied to a projection, and so calling, and that's what, that we then, if it's off, because, well, it might be objective, it's not always accurate. If it's off because the economy does better, we're unable to save that unanticipated revenue. I don't call it excess. It's unanticipated revenue. The economy did better. Our tax system is one of the best in the country for responding to the economy as the economy grows. Ours grows well. Your staff have shown you comparisons with Washington State, which is dependent totally on a sales tax, pretty much, and a little bit of property taxes. And theirs doesn't grow with the growth of the economy as well as ours does over time, over the long term. So we have a great tax system for growing with the economy. That's the advantage of an income tax system. But our problem is the volatility hits us when we go into a recession. We don't have a rainy day fund. And I don't think looking back 5 years and then 2 years and comparing those is dealing with the issue of future volatility. You could be ultimately putting money in a rainy day fund when you're going into a recession under this plan. And I mean, the issue is the projection. It's hard to, volatility is hard to project, and so you should be calculating any, you might want to call it excess, I would call it unanticipated revenue, based on was the projection off, and before June 30th of a biennium, was the projection off, then let's put that into a rainy day fund. But to do it by looking back 5 years and taking an averages, that's not, what happened at a three-year period compared to a two-year period doesn't help you with the volatility of going forward. And it just doesn't make sense to me. And when the real issue is, frankly, when we get that unanticipated money, we're unable to save it. And so I would rather have it diverted in a way that legislative council can figure out how to do so that the kicker doesn't kick because of the capital gains, because they are so impossible to accurately predict.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Sheketoff? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 567 and open a work session on Senate Bill 567. Representative Reed.
Mr. Chair, before I make a motion, one note it is important for people to remember is that if this bill passed, it is a statutory dedication of funds, so that if in a future biennium there were some circumstances we can't anticipate, the legislature could decide in a given year not to follow that dedication to the Education Stability Fund. So just to make that point.
As long as it acted before June 1st.
Correct.
Right. Representative Reed?
Mr. Chair, I move the -A8 amendments to Senate Bill 567.
Representative Reed moves the -A8 amendment to Senate Bill 567. Is there discussion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, it's so ordered. Representative Reed?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 567 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Reed moves Senate Bill 567 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative Rance, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be supporting the bill. I do share some of the concerns that we've heard from our single witness, but the concept of saving is a good one, and the fact that we do have a way out of it, if it turns out it's not in the best interest of the state, is I'm glad President Reed made that point. I struggled with this 2 months ago when we went over it the first time, and I had to go back and look at my notes to remember what it was that was so difficult. But the challenge of looking backwards to try to predict that which is going to occur in the future has been already commented upon. So I came down on realizing that savings is a good thing, and as long as it doesn't affect the kicker calculation, then I'm supportive. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other discussion? Representative Whitsitt.
I agree with Representative Benson, as long as we have on the record, and it's understood in statute that this will not affect the way the kicker kicks, I will support it also.
Other discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to the motion, which is to send the bill to the floor? No objection. Motion carries. Bill goes to the floor. Representative Reed, will you carry?
Yes, please.
Representative Reed will carry the bill. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 567 and open a work session on House Bill 2171. Colleagues, while Christine is coming, I will note the relating clause in this bill is relating to taxation. It looks to me as though we're closing in on an agreement on the tax credit bill, and so I have asked for this bill to be prepared to be moved to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits for the purpose of having it available to be used for that purpose. I think it is safe to say that we're not prepared to comment on or work the bill as it exists. Christine, anything else?
No. Mr. Chair, would you like me to describe the bill as it exists, or
no.
Is that moot?
Okay. That's surplus. At this point. I mean, I'm asking the committee to send it to the other committee for the purpose of working a different bill, so I think that's probably irrelevant at this stage.
Okay.
Representative Vega Peterson?
Chair, I move House Bill 2171 without recommendation to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits.
Thank you. Representative Vega Peterson moves House Bill 2171 without recommendation to the floor without recommendation and with a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits. Any discussion? Representative Benz, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll be a no on this, as I was the last time on a similar bill for the purpose of making the point that we think we have sufficient vehicles in tax credits to serve its purpose.
Thank you. And unfortunately, it turns out we don't. So that's the reason for moving it. Other discussion? I think we better call the roll.
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Leiniger?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Representative Smith-Warner?
Aye.
Representative Whitson?
No.
Vice Chair Vega Peterson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Benz?
No.
Chair Barnhart?
Aye. The motion, having received the required majority, is adopted, and the bill goes to Joint Committee on Tax Credits. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2171. Colleagues, I'm hoping that we can get the conflict amendment for Senate Bill 80 and hear some additional testimony in the morning tomorrow. So be on your toes and look for a potential meeting out of the normal course of things. If worse comes to worse, we'll probably meet at the usual time. 1 o'clock. At this stage, I can't tell you whether anything else is going to be scheduled. Those who've been here a while recognize that end of session means be ready on a moment's notice. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And with that, the committee is adjourned.